Hello and welcome to Sports Community Podcast, produced in the studios of RPP FM 98.7, 98.3 FM, the voice of the peninsula. My name is Joe Novella, and along with my co-host Steve Pallas, we'll bring you the latest news and information in the world of grassroots sport so you can help your club succeed. And after the show, why not visit our website at www.sportscommunity.com.au to view all our previous podcasts and free resources on a broad range of topics, including grants, fundraising, and sponsorship. And while you're there, make sure to sign up for our newsletter so you can stay on top of all the wonderful resources that we have available at sportscommunity.com.au, including our suite of training products to help make your club successful. All right, mate, welcome to you. How are you?
Joe, I'm very well. Great to be here again. I'm exhausted from a huge weekend of sport. There was some...
I thought you were going to say you're exhausted from that huge introduction, but I have to say there is so much happening on the sports community website that it is almost an impossible task to encapsulate everything that's going on there, including our we've got training... self-paced training that people can do on their computer at home. We've got webinar products coming up. We've got free articles. We've got all kinds of things going on our website. You know, it's almost impossible to tell everybody about the things that are going on.
Well, luckily I don't have to, because I'm pretty sure you just did. But, geez, it was a big weekend, Joe, from Cadell Evans doing his farewell professional race up the Great Ocean Road to the Tri-Series cricket finishing to a relatively small tournament for soccer. Just went by.
You had to choke to get that one out, didn't you?
Just the Asian Cup, Joe.
We are the champions, my friend, and for those of you who listen to us regularly, you'll know that I am a passionate football supporter. Now, call it what you want. I call it football because that's what the FFA does. I don't mind people who call it soccer because that's what it's known as around Australia for a long time. I don't care whatever people call it, as long as they support it. And what a great day for football in this country with the Socceroos being crowned as the Asian champions. That was a magnet. Well, I tell you what, I lost my voice and I had a few friends come over, and we had a bit of a nail-biting type night when the Koreans scored, and I must say, well-deserved goal in the 89th minute. But I have to admit, I hit the panic button. I thought we were done and dusted because we were looking tired, but that true Aussie spirit shone through, Steve, and we got the win in the end for our first piece of silverware as the national Australian football team. Amazing.
Yeah, and I was listening to, a very major milestone in Australian sport, and I was listening to FFA CEO David Gallop, and he was more coming at it, yes, the Socceroos need a commercial partner, but he was more coming at it from the boost that it's going to hopefully bring at the grassroots level. My apologies for my phone going off. That's just the professionalism we have here at Sports Community. But how do you, if you're a football/soccer club, Joe, how would you be taking advantage of the opportunity that now presents football at right now, right at this time, with the very, very high profile that it's got, and also the good news story of winning the Asian Cup?
I think that's a really good question, and I think there's two parts to it. One of the things that clubs can do now is promote the fact that we now have a very clear development path from grassroots football clubs, soccer clubs, through to our domestic league, the A-League, through to our national team. The days of everybody in the national team coming from teams that play abroad are over. So we had in this current crop of players, a number of players that still ply their trade in the A-League, including Mark Milligan.
Captain of Victory, Joe.
Yes, Captain of Victory. Matty Mackay, who plays for the Brisbane Roar. So kids, parents, everybody involved in the game can see that there is a development path for players that want to play at the highest level by playing this game, and you can stay in this country and do it. A few of them, James Troisi, has just recently left from the A-League to play overseas, and he was a big part of the squad as well. So that's one way I would promote it. I would promote to the community out there using all the tools available to local clubs, their social media, their website, their newsletters, all these tools that they have available to them, to promote the fact that this is a sport that the kids can get into, which will enable them, if they want to progress through the ranks and make it to the elite level of the sport, which can command, you know, incredible fame and wealth and all the trappings that come with having an 800 million plus audience in the Asian Cup. And the second part of that is the participation part of that, because sport is not just for elite players. And in this, I often have long conversations with parents whose sole target is to make their kids become great players, and that's not the right attitude. That's not the right outcome all the time. In fact, it's very rarely the right outcome, because very few players make it to the elite level. More importantly, it's participation. It's about getting the kids out there and enjoying the sport. And the fact that the Asian Cup was such a great spectacle, that there was a full stadium, that there was a lot of buzz around the sport, a lot of people talking about the sport, generates enthusiasm out there in the community for the sport. So just piggyback on the back of that enthusiasm for the sport and get your community out there aware that it's a great way to get out there and be fit and have fun. And play the participation angle as well as the elite performance angle. Those are the two things I would suggest.
Well, I think the key for clubs, Joe, right now is the time to get out and promote the sport within the community, whether it be schools, whether it be to the broader the club's broader local community, because soccer or football has a challenge that other sports don't have, that it's elite players, it's marquee players, and effectively it's ambassadors head off back overseas, the majority of them, and so they've really only got a very short promotional window to ride this good news story, because 2 or 3 weeks now, Joe, will head into, well, not even 2 or 3, 10 days, we'll head into the Cricket World Cup. And then we roll straight into the Grand Prix, and then we roll into the winter football code. So all of a sudden, football, soccer moves away from front of mind for people. So really, this is a really important time for clubs to get out into their communities, to touch base with the schools, introduce people to their clubs. Because what we see in all sorts of sports, but I guess cricket predominantly, is when there's a big news story like the Asian Cup, like the Ashes, there's often a spike in participation, and clubs need to go after that build on the interest that has happened at the Asian Cup, which has been phenomenal. The interest that's happened, even and I think it would have been deemed a success even if Australia hadn't have won the World Cup. It's a bit preemptive, Joe, but
let's hope
the Asian Cup. But I think it's really, really important for football clubs to not just assume that the community is just now going to come to them. They really have to ride this wave of popularity, enthusiasm, and tremendous goodwill, and that a lot of that's come about by the brand of football that were played by the national team, which caught a lot of people by surprise, not by how good it was, but by the style. And I heard a number of commentators call it a very Australian way of playing sport. So that's all really tremendously positive and goodwill, and clubs need to get out there and really create that link between their community and their club, and not just assume that it's going to happen, because it's going to be back page story for couple of weeks, and then the sports world moves quickly on, Joe, doesn't it?
It absolutely does, and that very, very good point about the timing of the promoting the game is a really, really good point. So if you're out there and you belong to a football soccer club, then make sure that you understand that now's the time to you know, get your membership drives out there. Now, you also mentioned another marquee event in there, the Grand Prix, of course, which is coming up in a month or two, a month and a half's time already, coming up very, very quickly. And we're lucky enough to have two of the main men involved in that fantastic event on the show today, and we're really, really looking forward to talking to these two guys. So stay tuned for that. But before we get into that, Steve, we need to talk to the listeners about the latest grants that are available to sports clubs featuring on our website this week.
Yes, after the break, Joe, we do have CEO of the Australian Grand Prix Corporation, Andrew Westacott, which will be really, really, really great. I'm really excited to talk to Andrew because it is one of the marquee events on the world sporting calendar. The Grand Prix drivers unanimously vote it year in, year out as the best Grand Prix in the world. So there's a lot that goes into that and a lot we can learn. But back to grassroots sport, which is our passion, Joe. And one of the major things that grassroots sports need is money, Joe. So grants. Grants are now starting with the year starting in earnest. Grants are now starting to come out. And we've got a couple of grants, Joe, that anyone can apply for. One of them is the Active in Parks grant, which is a little bit left field, and so some clubs may not be able to kind of tailor a way of getting to this small grant. But take it out. It's the Active in Parks grant. Take it outside grants gives you the opportunity to take your programs and activities outside by supporting you to buy equipment and resources. These grants are available to not-for-profit organisations, charitable organisations and sports clubs. So things like marquees and beanbags for outdoor spaces, Eskies, cooking equipments. So there's grants for up to between $500 and $1,500. So Active in Parks program. There's the Victorian Sport and Recreation Disability Grant. Now this is just open to Victorian clubs, Joe. It's relatively scarce in its... this one's got a lot of information. The Lifetime Care and Support Authority is providing funding for sport and recreation programs that improve the access for current and future scheme participants, so typically people with disabilities. To fund such projects such that will enable supporting people with disability to participate in sports, to improve their skills, knowledge and attitudes, towards people with disabilities within the community, for new ways to people with disability to access activities and more opportunities for people living with injury to participate in sport and recreation. So it's an area that clubs are now really starting to look at is including people with disabilities, because it's really important. Clubs are becoming more and more aware of the fact, Joe, that their membership really needs to reflect the profile of the community, and people with disabilities are a certainly an important part of the community in which clubs reside in. So it's becoming more and more common, thankfully, that the clubs are providing opportunities for people with disabilities. So this is a significant grant, Joe. There's funding. And my apologies, this is a New South Wales government grant, not Victorian. But you can get up to $35,000 for people and equipment sort of projects, and facility and technology projects up to $75,000.
Wow.
So that's big money, Joe, available to create opportunities for people with disability. And those opportunities often are participants, but also... people with disabilities, there's no reason why they can't participate and contribute in the way that around the club, in volunteer roles, in leadership roles, in coaching roles, in officiating roles. Joe, we've seen it time and time again. So seriously think about that for a grant. And Victorian. This is a Victorian grant for community sports. It's a little bit vague, and there's a lot of information on their website, but not necessarily about the amount of money. It's called Welcoming and Inclusive Clubs. The Welcoming and Inclusive Clubs program was created to support the Victorian Code of Conduct by Community Sport, for Community Sport, to promote positive behaviour in local sports. So working in partnership with state sporting associations, there's now money available to create welcoming and inclusive clubs. Now, what does that mean? That means to start to create programs for people that aren't traditionally involved in your club. So if you're predominantly Anglo-Saxon and the surrounding community is now kind of very multicultural or has multicultural components, creating the opportunity for those communities to join your club, people with disabilities, and all sorts of different ways that this can be applied to your club. So have a look at this grant and all the other grants on the Sports Community website. Just click on the grants tab. There's probably about 70 grants there at the moment, Joe. There's pretty much a grant for any reason that a club could be looking for money. So have a look there and good luck with your grant applications.
You're listening to Sports Community Radio with your hosts, Steve Pellis and Joe Novella, another Sports Community digital production, courtesy of www.sportscommunity.com.au. All right, welcome back. We are very privileged today to have two very, very fine guests in Andrew Westacott, the Chief Executive Officer of Australian Grand Prix Corporation, and with him, Craig Mocker, the Engineering Manager of Australian Grand Prix Corporation. Welcome to the show, gentlemen.
Thanks, Steve. Thanks, Joe. Thanks for having us.
Oh, thank you so much for joining us on the show. I can't believe that this next year is going to be the 20th running of the Grand Prix in Melbourne. I vividly remember going to the first one in Melbourne and thinking that it would never last. So, first of all, congratulations on having the event in Melbourne for 20 years. That's just tremendous.
You make those comments pretty much on the eve of clicking over 100 days to go to the event. So 2014 is now a distant memory, apart from Daniel Ricciardo's smile and his victories. And we're looking forward to showcasing Melbourne and hopefully an Aussie win for the first time in the 20 years.
Oh, yeah, that would be phenomenal. And I was just going to mention Daniel and his incredible debut season, finishing number three on the Formula One World Championship drivers' table. I mean, that must give the event notwithstanding that its 20th year, it must give it a tremendous boost of interest. I know it's in the community. It's already people. My mates are talking about it. So, how are you going to leverage off the success that Daniel's brought to the sport?
Well, we're definitely going to leverage off it, and I think it comes back to what we all love in Australian sport. If you go to the Davis Cup, you like seeing Rafter and Hewitt battling the Swedes or the French. We love seeing our sporting teams go very, very well. And when it comes to something like motorsport, we had Casey Stoner do the Stoner era. We had Mick Doohan, the Doohan era, and Wayne Gardner. And obviously now we've had the Mark Webber era, and we're well and truly into the Ricciardo era. And what it means for people like Craig and our engineering team is that they've got to be very, very aligned with our sales and our demand to be building additional grandstands, corporate facilities, and then the amenities like toilets and transport services and event infrastructure.
Well, Craig, I'll throw to you on that. Are you seeing an increase in ticket sales, and what are you expecting from a crowd point of view? And then secondly, from an infrastructure at the event point of view, are you seeing a bigger interest this year than others?
Absolutely. We've seen probably a 10% growth in the ticket sales at the moment. Daniel continuing to win. The sport is actually becoming a bit more interesting, a bit more competitive. It's driving sales quite well. From a planning perspective, we're dealing with quite a lot of interesting activations which are going to be making their way to the circuit. Just ticking along and making sure that we're keeping up with the times and, if not, inventing new things for the rest of them to follow.
Well, you mentioned the activations and sponsorship activations I want to go and have a look at. But Andrew, one of the, as we were saying before the interview, our most popular web pages on our website and the most popular training sessions and our soon-to-be-released book in the next 2 weeks all relates to sponsorship. It's what community clubs just seem to crave the most about information. So at the top end professional, or the very top end elite professional sporting event like the Grand Prix, what are the different components that you're seeing sponsorship packages comprising of? Because it's not just signage and hospitality anymore, is it?
Well, no, it's certainly not. And gone are the days of people just putting a big check and money on the table and expecting nothing else in return. There's a very sophisticated approach that we take and also obviously our partners take when it comes to research and matching the demographics of our client base and the demographics of who they're wanting to appeal to, and whether that's done by appealing at the circuit or via TV, radio, social media activations and interaction, it's very much about getting to a target market, and the demographic and the people associated with our event are well known by us and are put to good use by those people who work with us.
Well, let's break that into two, and let's look at the physical activations, and I guess, Craig, that's where you have to the theory of the deal gets put to place, and then they hand it over to you to make sure it all happens. But what are some of the activations that are now coming about, and how are sponsors more involving your crowd in getting their message to them?
Let me start off by saying that one of the things we're seeing and a great area where there's been some activations that Craig's been doing is that there's a void in the Melbourne marketplace these days for an international motor show.
Yes.
We're finding is that the clientele who come along to our event, and there's about an estimated attendance of 300,000 plus across 4 days, 75% of those people will walk past one of the automotive displays that we have there. And what it does is it's more than just a car yard. The car manufacturers are having displays and integrating those displays and the vehicles that they're wanting to sell in a variety of different ways. And it's Craig's job to bring that to life for companies like Renault or Porsche, for instance, and it's done in interesting ways.
So how do you balance that, Craig, by people, I mean, the huge volumes coming through, people wanting to touch and feel and be involved, but also looking after, you know, the safety of everybody, but also the customer experience, which, or the experience of people there, which can be really negatively impacted by large crowds?
Well, let's take an example of last year. We had the Mazda Celebrity Challenge, for instance, where we had, I think it was 20 race cars that we had celebrities driving. We had a couple of the, we had all the cars on display. We had a great big garage which demonstrated what the cars look like inside, and the punters can just literally walk up and have a touch, have a feel, have a look inside and see how the race cars work. Obviously, from a Mazda perspective, last year it was more about promoting the Mazda 3. I think the year previously we had the Mazda 6.
Yes.
So Mazda enjoyed that so much they bought us the Mazda 3. So it's just, you know, providing that entertainment on track, and, you know, quite a few people follow the celebrities. We had the first year we had the Bachelor. Had lots of people were following him. I know my wife was one of them. She was quite interested in how well he was doing, and just really bringing the people to the vehicles and to the brands. And we've also got another product called the Renault Talk Bar. You know, Renault saw that as a great way of networking and having people, you know, see their products. We had a couple of their cars on display, as well as their Formula One Lotus Renault on display as well. So they interacted with that quite nicely. And it's more and more, it's, you know, we talk about money can't buy experiences, but yeah, a lot of it money can. And one of the global partners, UBS, has an association with the event on a global basis, but what they do locally is have a thing called Cycle the Circuit. So bike riding these days is wonderfully appealing for those people who are also aligned to the banking offerings of a group like UBS.
Yes. So
what they had was a Cycle the Circuit activity,
which was done on a Friday morning. They engaged the services of our Tour de France champion, Robbie McEwen, three times Green Jersey winner, and UBS customers and other individuals could actually participate in a cycling activity with Robbie McEwen, and they had breakfast afterwards and were able to obviously network with those individuals. Another one from more of a community feel is the Swiss Colour Run, and we actually did a community-based activity with Swiss. There were 16,000 runners on a wonderfully sunny Sunday morning 2 weeks before this year's event, and they participated in a 5 kilometre jog around the circuit and then proceeded to throw every conceivable colour under the sun all over oneself, myself included, and had a fantastic day. So there's an example of getting to the target market of UBS as an investment bank versus Swiss from a colour run point of view versus the activities of people like Renault. And Qantas is another one that has had a long association with the event, and they use it to promote their corporate flight programs, the frequent flyer program, and they're generally they're great services.
And there's a little more impressive than the Qantas aeroplane flying very low over the course on race day. It's interesting you talk about that walk around the track and ride around the track, because I'm just trying to think. I reckon at least 3 or 4 times over the last 20 years, and I reckon more. I have driven around the track at 60 kilometres an hour within 48 hours of the race finishing. You know, like, that's one of the benefits of having that street circuit, isn't it? That we all get to feel and touch and relate to it and visualise the different parts that we see on television or at the racetrack itself.
You bet, and that's one of the unique things about the location that you know, we're a team of 50 people here at the Grand Prix, and we're all very proud of Melbourne and Victoria and the job we do, and Craig has that responsibility to lead the engineering team. And so ultimately, one of the challenges when it comes to safety and building all these things is to do that in a park that is fully operational and functional. There's about 6 million people who use Albert Park on an annual basis based on Parks Victoria numbers. And it's, if you consider that it's actually open for the 4 days of the event, it's only closed to the public for 3 days per year to build the whole Grand Prix, and Craig and the team do that with a lot of attention to detail and care for the environment.
Oh, I think it's phenomenal what the Grand Prix's bought. I mean, I know it divides the community, not equally, but it does divide it. But in the late 80s, I played cricket at South Melbourne at the old Lakeside Oval, and twice or three or four times a week, I'd be running around Lakeside Oval, and it used to be a barren wasteland, and people forget that. And I think that's one of the side effects or the consequences of the Grand Prix has been that rejuvenating that whole precinct. But one of the things that over the journey that's been interesting has been creating the event around the event, so the non-racing sort of activities. So, and Craig, this would be some more challenges for you, but like the music side of it and... I mean, if you want to announce a couple of the upcoming guests and a couple of the upcoming activities on, you know, we've only got a small 3,000 people audience, so they won't tell anyone if you want to announce what's coming for next year on our show. But the bringing, you know, music events and showing sponsorship activations and creating an event around the event is something that's certainly become very, very popular. Is one word potentially, but common and just almost compulsory now?
Look, we've got a pretty broad appeal when it comes to the kind of entertainment we provide. If you look over the last few years, we've had the Nitro Circus guys in town, we've had Krusty Demons, we had Tony Hawk last year. Over the years, we've had pretty big concerts in the form of Kiss. We've had, you know, we had Bernard Fanning, I think it was last year.
Yeah.
So there is quite a diverse range of entertainment that we provide. We've got a lot of the kids activations that we have on our golf course, where we have the Porsche Driving School, for instance, which is for the youngsters to get an understanding of driving. You know, it's quite good and interactive with them. There's we've got a whole Disney activation where there's jumping castles for the little kids, and there's quite a few things which range in the age groups. We've got the PGA on the golf course, so the entertainment is extremely broad. We try and cater for all our markets. And I think the reason we do this is because ultimately we have Formula One. I mean, we have the best motorsport in the world in Formula One. We have the best motorsport in Australia in terms of V8 supercars and Porsche Carrera Cup. But when there's downtime and people aren't watching the activity on the track, Melburnians want to be entertained, and we're entertained in such fantastic ways around our city that what we want to do is when something as big as Formula One comes to town, we want to be able to ensure that parents can take the children along and there's something for the children to do, or there's a bit of musical entertainment. And the broadening of the appeal that Craig referred to is about a move away from, say, the after race mega concert like Kiss or The Who,
yep,
to something that's going to appeal across all 4 days of the event for the family. And that's why these action zone style activities of Nitro Circus or Tony Hawk are wonderful, because they can perform 3 or 4 or 5 times per day.
Yes.
People can come along and see them, and what we try and do is make sure that food and drinks are very, very affordable. In fact, there's nothing stopping people bringing a picnic rug and bringing a hamper and sitting on the banks of the Albert Park Lake listening to a bit of this music or seeing the entertainment in a very affordable manner.
Yeah, absolutely. It's I do think back to 20 years ago when we went to the first one, and it was very much a boys sort of afternoon, and I now kind of in the last couple of years when I've been, was struck by the number of families and kids and big family groups together. I think that's been a tremendous evolution for the event. But I just want to, just in the last 5 or so minutes that we've got, like, how do you, and I guess, Andrew, this is a question for you, like, how do you structure the planning and the execution of the event? I mean, what groups and teams, how have you structured your team and what tasks have you grouped together and to make such a successful event? Like, how have you, what's the structure of the organisation? How does it work?
Well, at the core of it, I shouldn't say at the core of it because that would be taking away, but I was going to start by saying there's an operations and engineering department which is responsible for building and operating the venue, everything from the circuit build from a motorsport side of things to making sure that people can get to and from the venue with efficient transport services.
Yes.
There's a marketing department that looks after the marketing promotions of the event, and that also includes the social media activities, which are obviously so important these days and become an integrated part of the PR, media and communications, which has twofold. It not only relates to the selling of the event, but all from a ticketing point of view, but also the brand and the reputation and the government relations or community relations aspects that we as a government entity are always faced with dealing with. We've obviously got the sales area, and that covers off the corporate grandstand and general admission sales. It also includes sponsorship, and it also includes those royalty areas which might relate to merchandise. We have a motorsport and entertainment department which looks after, as the name suggests, all motorsport of an on-track and off-track nature. And it also has the entertainment areas, and that includes paid entertainment or free entertainment. And some of those then get into the area of working with some of our sponsors and partners, because some of the things that they may bring are also actually entertaining the crowd. And so I guess the advice is, whilst you have all these different departments, you've got to make sure that there's very open collaboration, communication, because things can change very, very rapidly. One of the things we've got to do is make sure that the circuit plan and the layout is done, and everything's got to be very, very specified so that every part of the business knows what's got to be achieved. And then you've got the support services. There's the finance, the legal, the risk and safety, the HR, and the executive functions that deliver it all at the end of the day. So that's a sort of, it's probably a traditional approach. We have a core of 50 people. We ramp up to 150 for the Formula One event, and we also deliver the Motorcycle Grand Prix, commonly referred to as MotoGP, down at Phillip Island. And that probably has an additional 50 people who come on in a variety of roles in the lead up to the event.
Andrew, it's Joe here. Occasionally, Steve lets me off the leash. and I get to ask a question. So I just want to ask you, just quickly, as the head honcho, as the chief, how do you measure the success of the event? Do you measure it in terms of revenue? Do you measure it in terms of people through the door, through the gates, tourists to Victoria? What are the KPIs to measure the success of the event?
The above, Joe. So Steve's got to let you off the leash a bit more. Ultimately, you know, we are delivering a sporting event, but if you go back to a much higher level, our job is to promote Melbourne and Victoria through the staging of two international motorsport events. So people have got to remember and always keep in mind that we're staging two events that are ultimately marketing tools to promote the city on a very, very competitive international basis. When every city from Abu Dhabi to Paris to Berlin to London to New York to Qatar, and you only have to look at what happens with Commonwealth Games, Olympic Games and FIFA World Cup soccer tournaments to see that it's a very, very big business. So the measurement of our success is done by all of the above. We'll have very quantitative measures of wanting to achieve revenue growth, attendance growth, more bums on seats for corporate grandstand and general admission. We want to make sure that some of those are growing in profitability. We want to ensure that we've got widespread attendance and we can make the event as affordable as possible. And sometimes then that flies in the face of just growing revenue. So we've had for the last couple of days or couple of years a partnership with the Royal Children's Hospital to open up the event to children free on a Thursday.
Oh, fantastic.
Which is a great way of actually giving people their first taste of a Formula One event that's ultimately owned by all Victorians. And then we get the softer measures, but equally that they can be harsh as well, public sentiment, media sentiment, general feedback from patrons attending, the international media, the international teams, and we're regularly judged as one of the best and most efficiently run Grand Prix around the world.
Well, Andrew and Craig, thank you so much for your time. And I guess speaking on behalf of all Melburnians, we're extraordinarily proud of the job that you do and the event that you put on that represents us as Melburnians and us as Australians. And it's a major part of why we consider ourselves to be the sporting capital of the world anyway. So thank you so much for sharing some of that insight. We would have loved to have touched more on social media and safety and marketing and a whole lot of other things that you do so well. But maybe you'll come back again and join us on our show and continue to share what you do so well at a professional level with our community clubs.
Oh, happy to do so. And I think we do live in the best city in the world. And one of the things that makes us so good is that we're always striving for excellence and wanting to outdo other events or other sporting clubs or anything else. So we'll always work together, but you always want to be better than the opposition. And sometimes that opposition is the other local events around town, and that's what makes it a great place to work and live.
Thanks, Craig. Thanks, Andrew.
Thank you.
You're listening to Sports Community Radio with your hosts, Jonah Vella and Steve Pallas. If you've missed a couple of our episodes, why not visit our website at www.sportscommunity.com.au. And there you'll find all our previous podcasts that you can download. And while you're there, give us a review so you can help spread the news about Sports Community and its services to the grassroots sports clubs. Okay, we're coming to the end of another podcast. And Steve and I would like to thank you for joining us today and remind you that you can access all of our previous podcasts at www.sportscommunity.com.au, as well as a world of great content, including free resources to help your club with fundraising, sponsorship, growing your membership. And while you're there, why not subscribe to our newsletter to help you keep up to date with all the latest news in grassroots sports, including the latest grants. And you heard a few of them today, which involve a significant amount of money, $70,000 we're talking. So well worth your while to subscribe to our newsletter to make sure that you keep on top of all the grants that are available for your clubs. And you can also stay connected to us via our Facebook page and also our Twitter feed. And you can contact us at jointheshow@sportscommunity.com.au if you've got any feedback on the radio show, positive or negative. It's okay. Steve and I are both big boys and we can take both of those types of feedback. We do prefer the positive, of course, but
we'll generally get the negative.
We'll take the negative as well and try and rectify that. We hope you've enjoyed the show. And on behalf of myself, Joe Novella,
and myself, Steve Pallas, thank you for making us part of your sports community.
Sports Community Podcast and Radio is produced in the studio of RPPFM 98.3, 98.7, the voice of the peninsula.